audio drama production podcast.
So, Austin, why do you have to keep leaving the booth to change your levels?
Because I still don't have my computer inside the booth.
Hey, okay. So didn't we talk about setting up like an RDP session from a laptop to control the other computer?
Yeah, but Didn't we talk about how I'm completely disorganized and forget everything?
Like anything, right. a tablet, man. I use a tablet to control when I'm in the booth.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't mean to tease you too much here, Austin.
It's all right. I fully deserve it.
I do. I mean, how's everybody doing tonight?
Pretty good. Just did a 48-hour film project over the weekend.
Oh, those are awesome. Those were like one of the inspirations for 11th Hour. So those are awesome.
That makes sense. I mean, it's a very similar feeling. I've never done a film project before, so this was exhausting.
Yeah.
I bet, but I bet it was fun as hell.
It's fun in retrospect. During, it was just exhausting.
Oh, so, yeah. Austin, are you familiar with the 48-hour film festivals, what they are?
No.
Scooter, can you explain it to him?
Yeah, sure. The way ours worked, you show up at a building in the city, for DC in this case, at like 7 o'clock on Friday. And what they do is everybody for the facility has like a couple of common things they have to include in their movie. And usually it's between 4 and 7 minutes for each movie. And then each team draws a theme that they have to use for the construction of their movie. So for this time, the common thing was it had to be a podcast about including a character named Kate, or I think Kevin, was it? Beltran. And then it had to involve tape. Oh, and the phrase, there's no I in team.
Okay.
Huh.
And then the theme that we pulled was we could choose from either a silent movie or a horror suspense.
Wow. What did you choose?
We went with it depends on when is this going out?
No idea.
No idea.
So if I tell you any more about it, you'd have to wait until the beginning of next month.
We can wait till the beginning.
Because
that's
part of the deal.
We can do that.
Okay. Yeah, because I think the 5th of next month is when this is supposed to all be, like, not in public.
Okay, yeah. We can throw another episode in between.
Yeah, it's fair. So we decided to do a episode about a podcast that was a silent movie. So we did, like a silent movie about a podcast creation.
Excellent, I love it.
And the podcast was an interview series where they were interviewing for this episode someone who has decided to live like it was the 17th century.
Wow.
Nice.
That's crazy.
It was definitely crazy.
And,
and
so this is writing everything from writing to post-production all done in 48 hours, right?
Yeah. You're not supposed to pre-prep anything, including images or CG or anything like that. You're supposed to all do it within that 48-hour period.
Oof.
Wow.
That's cooking.
You can license a couple of things, but like you're supposed to do your own music or at least pay to license it within that time period.
Right.
And that's mostly just so people don't like make 3/4 of it and then just tweak it for whatever the theme is.
Mm,
right.
It was nuts.
Cool. Well, what else have you been working on? And you've got a lot of projects that have been on your plate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're working on season 3 of Anansi Storytime. We just started post-production for it. Yeah, it's been like 4 or 5 months since the last season came out. So we're taking a break to work on our other projects. 3 episodes of Legends Myth should be coming out soon. We just are releasing this Friday. It's the 24th. A story where we convert a story-ish feeling song by S.J. Tucker into like an audio drama episode.
Nice. Wow, that's cool.
Basically, we pull the story out of it, turn the whole song into a full story, and then afterwards play the song.
Excellent.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah, I like it. I want to do it with other songs. It's just a matter of finding songs that already lean in that direction and finding musicians that are willing to give us a license to use their material.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then we're doing a couple of spooky stories, like just general horror suspense, because we're just playing around with a couple of different types of audio drama just to see what it's, I guess, for the challenge.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
I love horror. Horror's like it's my bag, baby.
Yeah, I've never worked on horror before, so this is the first time that I've either done post or written horror. So it didn't come out perfect, but I think I want to try again.
You guys should come play at the 11th Hour Productions this year.
You should.
Where is that?
Well, it's not a where, it's kind of just a when. most of it's done online. Some of us get together, like we got together with Austin last year, Austin and Faith McQuinn. And did a show last year. So we do it every October. So we send out the call in September for writing. That way people got time, because we're doing a full 30-minute production. So there's no way you're going to do that in 48 hours. So we give the writers a month ahead of time to write. And then starting in the month of October, so production and post-production are not allowed to start until October 1st. On October 1st through October, like, 28th is production time. And that's when everybody records, does sound design, does music for their production, turns it into us by the 28th. That way I've got a day or two to turn it around by the 30th, which is audio drama day. So
do you have to do all of your own, like, original sound work? You can't, like, pull licensed sound effects?
You can pull licensed sound effects. I use licensed sound effects. Yeah. Okay. I would not get anything done in that small of an amount of time if I had to record it all myself. No.
Yeah, because I was thinking that would literally be my life outside of a job doing that.
Well, the beauty of the 11th Hour Productions is the whole idea behind it is collaboration with other studios. So, like, say, for instance, you guys could do all, like, maybe the writing and the recording, and then have somebody else's studio do the post-production.
Yeah, it's totally about collaborating.
Or something along those lines, whatever.
Yeah, like last year we got Faith McQuinn to write for us, and her sound guy, Joshua Suey, and I did the sound. Austin did the dialogue editing and was the recordist and one of the actors. Yeah, we were all multitasking that day.
So is there a community where people discuss and kind of figure out who they're going to work with? Or is it just
there's
kind
an
of
11th Hour forum online where, like, if you're going to participate in 11th Hour, we let you in and you can talk about things with your team there on Facebook. And yeah, then there's the 11th Hour Facebook page, which just kind of announces to the audience, you know, what's going on.
That's cool. I know I've heard several people talk about participating in it, and it's the challenge of it sounds interesting.
It gets really bigger and bigger every year. Like, we started out with one team. The next year we had three. The next year we had five, and last year we had like 13 different productions going on. It was almost too many.
Wow. Yeah, at some point you might have to start cutting things off.
It's great to have that much participation. It's just it was me, Austin, Steve, and Kessie Relinicki running everything, and four people is not enough to handle more than 13 shows.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a lot.
It is a lot of fun, though. It gets hectic, but it's a lot of fun.
I used to do when I was in the military for a while, and every October I did haunted houses on the base somewhere. And when I was in high school, I did haunted houses then too. And so this has kind of become my haunted house. It's become my, hey, let's play with some horror for Halloween kind of and scare some people kind of fun.
Yeah, it's awesome. I look forward to it every year.
I think I would like to try it. It depends on how things are going closer to. But yeah, reach out to me. At the very least, maybe not doing a production all on our own, but helping.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we do. We just kind of group together in clumps of, you know, twos and threes, and, you know, one post-production team works with another production team who works with another writer. And because we're all online and on the internet, it's really kind of easy to get together if you want to record remotely. And like, if you're close to people that you want to work with, you can kind of work with them too. So, but both aspects are available to you, which kind of makes it really, really flexible in terms of participation.
I wish we had more projects like that, more interesting creative projects in the community, like community collaboration stuff.
I agree.
One of the things that we're playing around with is, so Austin, you were a part of this too. For the bonus episode for season 3 for Anansi Storytime, we pulled in 6 different creators from other shows and had them do just like 1 or 2 off lines. And I'm starting to like that as an idea in general, because it's really annoying to have an actor come in for a session if they're only going to be here, if they really only need like 2 lines.
Right.
But if I can connect with people in the community online that already have a studio and they can bang it out and it's not going to be a huge deal for them, you know, when they're already in the studio, that might make more sense.
Yeah. And there's people out there who've got some really, really great setups for recording.
Yeah, I like that. Plus, it's including other people, because, I mean, like, we've been entirely local. I don't want to do, like, a big – I don't want to make people that are inside of our troupe feel like they're not welcome by continuously casting people that are, you know, not physically here.
Sure. Absolutely.
Because I like the feeling of a troupe as opposed to, like, a couple of local actors and then a bunch of remote actors.
You get a better,
I understand that completely.
Yeah. You get a better presence out of the actors when they're in the room together too. It's something that time and time again, I've worked with, you know, I've worked remotely and worked on shows where the actors in the room, and you're just able to sculpt the performance a lot more. You're able to direct it and mold it a lot more. And, you know, the actors are kind of bouncing off of each other with ideas a lot more because you're interacting rather than, you know, talking to what you think the other actor is going to do, what you think the other actor is going to say. There's a lot more chance for the unexpected, which makes it a little more organic.
Yeah, no, I agree. But yeah, so we're going to try to start incorporating more remote actors for these moments that have, like, we're having a hard time casting something and we don't want to have to pull somebody in for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Super short session.
Yeah, like you said, for side roles and like one-off or throw-off side characters or background voices or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, we'll still offer them to local actors if they want to come out and are willing to come out for a 2-hour session for their 5-minute part. But
right.
Yeah,
it just allows you more availability if, you know, if they're not available locally, you have another recourse for, you know, those parts.
Right. It means that I don't have to play all the small parts that we have a hard time.
Yeah, absolutely. We did the same thing with Wordtastic. We recorded, so it's a kids show. So we recorded the kids kind of all together, like over, got together with Steve Schneider over like a 1-week period and just recorded the kids. But yeah, all the small roles that the kids interact with, those were remote recorded. That way we could reach out, because a Wordtastic taking place around the world. So we needed, you know, people with an authentic Australian accent, people with an authentic Spanish accent, just because it's taking place in these different regions. And that's not always something you can reach out your back door and find. I'm sorry, I'm babbling over here.
No,
you're not babbling at all. You're not babbling at all. So the only other thing I'm working on is, I was talking to Austin a little bit about this, where I'm doing this project called Geek Core Radio.
Oh yeah, I saw that. That looks fun.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. Where we're basically playing music that's nerd focused music. Mm-hmm. So like I'll sit there and talk about what the song's about, or maybe if the IP it's based off of is not super common, I might give a little bit of background about that. And then we play the full song. So
nice.
That's taken up more time than I thought it was going to take up, but it's fun. That's a lot of project. I think that's like every project that I do is, this is going to be easy. And it's like, this was not, this was not easy.
It never is.
It never is. I mean, like, this is one of the first times that I'm doing production without anybody else's help. Like the post-production.
Oh, so, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, I only learned any kind of audio engineering for story time in the first place. And so I've been kind of doing it with two or three other people for years. And yeah. I was like, well, I can use this as an opportunity to grow, even though it's going to be painful, you know, figuring out, since I usually do like maybe the earlier parts of the process and then I just kind of review the later parts. Now I have to learn like how to mix and master and like all these kinds of stuff that's I have never done before.
How's that going?
It's not good.
Well, what do you
have? The end product is not terrible. Oh man. Yeah. It's just, well, it's just understanding how best to record stuff when I don't have a director or an audio engineer in the room telling me what's going on.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like solo recording is a little weirder when I don't have somebody else to check, you know, because I'm focused on the performance. So I'm not necessarily thinking about the quality.
That's tough. When I'm recording. That's tough in any case. Ideally, yeah. I like to have three people in the room, me, a recordist. So me directing a recordist to record, a separate recording engineer, and the script supervisor to, you know, fill out the slates and take notes. And
that's ideal.
That's having an ideal setup, you know, and you by script supervisor, I mean, you know, my wife or my son, and throwing a pen at them and going, you're going to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. We end up having like an audio engineer, which almost always ends up being me. If one of our other engineers are free, they'll come out, but I'd rather have them focus on actual post-production.
Yeah.
Because if I only have a certain amount of their time, I'd rather be there. And then, yeah, I guess script is kind of everybody in the room.
Yeah.
That's not currently acting.
Yeah.
But that's not the same. It'd be nicer if we had somebody that was dedicated to that.
Yeah. Having at least a recordist and separate from the director, because there's so much to focus on as a director, and there's so much to focus on in the sound space. Like I was recording at Steve's and, you know, he's directing and he's here going, okay, we got to cut, you know, your heater's going overhead. So you got to listen for all that background noise that nobody else is hearing. And that's hard to do when you're focused on the performance.
Oh, I agree. Like we had to re-record almost a third of a performance for one of the stories for season three, almost entirely because I didn't realize that there was like background noise coming through a cable that was dying.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just like a loose cable. Like the connector at the end was not quite fully plugged.
Yep.
Yeah.
So for a third of it, it had like static and like clicking noise.
Oh, no.
That was just terrible. So we had to bring them in for a re-recording and I was like, you didn't do anything wrong. It's just, I'm an idiot. So, yeah, it was. So, I mean, like I think that's pretty much everything I'm doing, especially creative wise.
I forgot my battery backup and kicked a plug loose and lost about 2 hours worth of recording one day. And we had to pull the actors back in.
Oh, my gosh.
It doesn't automatically save as you go? Like you have to...
Not the recorder I was using. I was using an R24. And it's got battery backups, but that was my stupid fault for not putting batteries in there. But yeah, okay. It doesn't write. So it writes to local memory until you hit stop, and then it records it to the disk.
Yeah. I was afraid that's what mine did too when we had a power failure and I don't have a battery backup for my system. And then I found out that it actually Reaper, when it's coming in through the DAW, it's just automatically running it to disk.
Yeah, Reaper. If you're running through Reaper, yeah, it's automatically going to run it through. This was this was a standalone recorder that I had. I didn't have a computer system hooked up to.
Gotcha. So what are you two working on? I haven't heard anything. Well, a little bit from Austin. But what are the two of you working on, especially like creative project-wise?
Currently, I am completely immersed in dialogue editing in Wordtastic.
Yeah, we're both working on Wordtastic right now. We're like full forward post-production on, what is it? It's 13 episodes and 4 promo.
And a zero episode.
So, yeah.
That's a lot. How long are the episodes?
About 30 minutes.
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah, that's a lot.
we're looking at getting that out by like January. But that's yeah, it's fully recorded. We're just in post-production mode now. And so, yeah, Austin and I have pretty much got our heads down working on that most of the time. We've also got episodes of the Once in Future Nerd that I did post-production on. One of them came out. I'm not sure if the other one came out just yet. What else am I working on? So many things.
When's the rest of Otherworldly's coming out?
That's, yeah. So if I can ever get Steve to agree to that my dialogue edit, or my sound effects editing for today is okay, then I can move on to Otherworldly's. Basically, I work on Otherworldly's when I can, but I'm a client first kind of, you know, situation.
Right. I mean, you've got a business.
Yeah, I've got people paying me to do what I do, so I need to, you know, focus on them first, and then I do Otherworldly's in my spare time. It's just been a project that's been dragging on. But I've got one that I'm like 3/4 of the way through the sound effects. I just need to finish that up and then go through and do the music. So in another week or two here, I should have another episode of Otherworldly's out. I'm supposed to be doing a monthly. I'm even failing at that.
That's fair. I mean, like, honestly, it's so easy to get yourself backlogged and bogged down in projects that, yeah, it's crazy.
We've got a one-off that's completely finished that we haven't released yet. We've got another one-off that is recorded, and I'm waiting to start dialogue.
So what's the other one-off? I know about the first one.
The other one is a short called A Bitter Place that Jeremy just wrote just a couple of weeks ago. And it's basically these people escaped from a facility. It's like there's a human cleansing going on, like they're, you know, depopulating the planet. And these people escaped, and like, but they're doing it through disease, and these people escaped, and they're progressively dying as they're trying to run away. And they basically end up dying, and then it skips ahead like 100 years, and like some people out hiking in the woods find their skeletons.
Oh, neat. Neat.
And then one of the dudes that's hiking, he lays down next to one of the skeletons to get a selfie. And as he gets up, he kind of like leans on the skeleton and breaks one of the bones, and some dust flies up into the air, and he inhales it. He ends up getting the disease. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. We should probably cut that part out of the interview, so we're not telling everybody the ending.
Yeah, we probably should.
Spoilers.
I know.
No. See, that's a Patreon exclusive.
I see. Ooh, there you go.
So that's actually one of the other things that I've been doing lately is trying to figure out how to revitalize our Patreon.
Yeah, we got to get on that too. Terrible at Patreon. I'm terrible at social media. Period.
I had to start installing things on my phone just so that I would do it like when I'm in the bathroom and stuff. Because that's the only time.
That's when I learned my Spanish. I can't even do it then. It's the only time I have to learn my Spanish.
Yeah, I know the feeling. It's. I think Austin's getting
did
a drink
leave?
Or something.
No,
I'm here.
So I'm here. The door.
I did walk over to the door and open it, but I'm back.
Okay. I mean, I'm glad that you're not getting murdered or anything. That's
no. I'm good.
Up behind you, Austin.
I'm murder free.
Yeah, that is a lot. I mean, for all of us to be doing, it's just a crazy amount.
But what are you going to do, right?
Yeah. Keep chugging along.
Right. Might as well.
I mean, like... So I'm definitely going to try to see about dragging you guys into some of the things that we're working on in the future.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
I want to start doing more horror stories. Mm-hmm. So if you know of anybody who's doing horror writing that's looking for a place to... have it produced, let me know.
Several horror writers out there. I know Steve definitely writes horror. Faith writes some excellent horror now and then.
Yeah, Steve is well overloaded. I talked to him about this a couple of months ago. He's just
fully into Wordtastic right now. He's producing it and it's coming out of his pocket right now. So he's
yeah, that's fair.
Who else? Richard Brooks writes horror.
Very well too.
Yeah, he does some good, like, very British kind of chilling kind of horror. So
excellent. Because I know a lot of people that produce horror. I don't know as many people that write horror.
Yeah, well, honestly, just listen to the listen through some of the 11th Hour submissions, or just look at, like, the names that are writing them.
That's true. I mean, yeah. Also, Deathscribe is well known for doing great horror.
Very much so. Yeah, we just played a Ellie Maitland interview last week. And yeah, they just opened up Deathscribe.
Yeah, I thought about submitting something to that again, but I'm don't have enough spoons to do an outside. Oh, so that's the other thing I did, is I tried to fill out all the paperwork needed for the Google podcast grant. You're familiar with that?
No.
Nope.
So Google was doing a thing that ended, I think, either mid last month or late last month, where it was like for 2 or 3 months, you could submit either a show idea that you had or a show that you have that you need more funding for. And they're going to accept a certain number of people. For the people that are accepted, you get like $40,000 in funding.
Oh, good Lord. Wow. I wish I had known about that now.
Well, they were talking about it. That's right. You're not in the Facebook community. They were talking about this in the Facebook community, which has actually gotten a lot more chill lately over the last like 3 months. But you have to come up with a budget for what your show would cost to produce for a year. And then they'll, as long as it's less than $50,000, they'll talk about what they'll provide. But in general, they were saying between 30 and 50. It's a grant, so you don't have to pay it back. But there are some, you basically have to try to follow their methodology for how to do things to improve. And then you end up, I forget what they actually get out of it. Besides covering your show as being a success from their program, they might get temporary exclusive access to it, but it's like a period of weeks, not even that long. It's nothing crazy, and they still allow you to monetize it on your own. So it's still your
for that.
They don't take IP rights or anything.
Yeah.
So it's basically just a really complicated form, and then it caused me to sit down and like break down how long every part of our production process takes and how much. So there's a lot of stuff. Like, I don't know what the amount of money that I should be paying different degrees of experience actors. Like, I kind of have a guess and I can kind of Google it, but not really.
Yeah.
Same for writers and same for like audio engineers, since everybody who's working on my project currently is volunteer, except in certain cases where we're not able to find somebody to do it and we have to pay for it.
Right.
And that sucks because that comes out of my pocket. So thinking about if all this volunteer work was actually paid work, it's terrifying. I mean, like, I think it came out to a season of Nazi story times, so like 1 year's worth of episodes, like 10 episodes with something like
that sounds 25K. Right.
Yeah. It's not crazy, but it's still a lot of money. Like, I wouldn't be able to pay that. And money's always a difficult thing to talk about in this community, but so I looked at that's one of the things that I thought was interesting about Geekcore Radio is that because it's really just me, the production costs go down a lot. Even if I was paying myself, I think I averaged, I think I just gave up on the pricing and I just said everybody makes $30 an hour. Just that seemed fair. I don't really even know if that's fair for most of these positions, but whatever. It seemed like a good starting place. Yeah, and so that was only for like, assuming I do one episode of that a year, so it's like 12 episodes. Then we're talking about, I don't know, $8,000 a year because it's not like multiple actors and there's not as much duplication of time.
Right.
It's at most one person working on it at a time. So, doing that kind of a price breakdown was interesting because I've never really like known about how long things happen, especially when I go on interviews for different things for story time. People ask that question a lot. but I've never like had to break it down like, piece by piece before.
So did you also break it down like how much it costs to make an episode, like per episode?
Yeah. Cost? Yeah. So, I mean, like the cost that I was telling you before, the 25,000, that was with the idea of it being, because 20 minute episode ish. And assuming that we're going to have 8 actors per episode on average.
Yeah.
And that's assuming that they're all going to be in the studio for the same time, because that wouldn't necessarily be true.
All right.
And it's a rough estimation. And then that's, yeah, I could show you, if you want, I could show you the hours breakdown. It's ridiculous. But like even that.
I'd be interested to see it, actually.
Yeah, sure. But even that with like, what was it, like 8 actors, 2 recording sessions that are about 3 to 4 hours each. So let's assume 3 hours each, so 6. Assuming they're not getting paid for casting, and I think that's normally how it works in the industry. The problem is I'm not super deep in the industry, so I don't even know what the standards are for some of this stuff.
It depends on where in the industry you're looking. Depends on if you're, you know, recording with independents or if you're recording with union.
That's fair. I mean, also, it probably depends on whether or not you're part of like a regular troupe versus a,
yeah.
Because troupe people just get paid no matter what for their time, right?
I know union minimums are $100, and that's for like special deals that you work out with the actor. And
that's for
$100 an hour. You have to pay an actor $100 minimum for the production, even if they're doing like 2 lines. That's union standards. That's SAG-AFTRA.
Okay. Well, that's actually, considering I was thinking $30 an hour for 6-hour sessions.
Yeah.
So that's like $180 an actor.
Yeah. If you're doing, yeah.
Yeah. On accident. It's just, you know, my rough estimation. Yeah. There's a lot of that stuff I'd like to do. And honestly, if I had the numbers behind it to support like an ad revenue / had the Patreon base to be able to start paying that, I'd love to.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's true for most of us.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
One of the fun things is I've brought this up with actors, like saying, hey, what happens if we did get this Google money? 80 or 90% of our actors said that they'd rather me not pay them.
Really?
Yeah. Easily. And same is kind of true for our engineers and our writers. Some of them would rather be paid, but probably 80%. Would rather I take the money and reinvest it into neat. Getting more fans.
Interesting. Yeah.
I think that's it'd be a different thing if we were pulling it like versus us getting like $30,000 grant versus us making $30,000 or $50,000 a year was the difference.
Right. Better. Yeah, sure.
But yeah.
That's awesome though.
Yeah. I mean, it shows that they're really interested in the project, but it's also indicative that most of them are working full-time jobs, so they don't, you know, $100 here and there is not going to make a difference for them.
Yeah.
Where if they were like professional actors and that was like their only way of surviving, then that's a very different thing.
Yeah,
that's what I run into. I do some volunteer shows, but for the most part I have to be like, I need a little bit of money at least, you know.
Well, that's what you do.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's also different where, like, if you're doing it regularly versus, like, a one-off thing or something similar. Because, I mean, like, for example, I do computer work for a living. I occasionally do computer work for friends, and it's not really that big of a deal for me. But there's a difference between I'm pretty comfortable with the money that I make as part of my job. So I don't – taking money from my friends doesn't really help that much.
Right.
But if I was, like – in a more unstable position, I could definitely see how that would be a lot more useful.
Yeah.
Sure. So that was fun because I filled out that process.
Yeah, I would be interested in looking at that because I obviously need to sit down and do that same thing for our troop as well.
Yeah, you should. It's a useful project. I can probably just share the doc with you.
Yeah, I mean, if you obviously, I you know, if you're uncomfortable, don't do it. But
it's not
if you don't mind, then that's cool.
Well, it's more because like all the numbers are fudged because I don't really know how much I'd pay somebody. So it's not like I'm showing you financials. More, I'm just showing you. I'd be showing you like how long things take.
Right.
And that's fine.
Okay. Yeah. If you don't mind, I'd love to look at it.
Yeah. Remind me after this, and I'll figure that out.
Sure.
So we also applied for a, there's a company that's doing pod funding.
Okay.
That we applied for a loan from, because I really would like to get to the point where we're, because we're averaging about like 2K viewers per, for the first like 6 months.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So it's not bad, but it's not great. It's kind of hard to get funding at that level, especially since most advertisers are really looking for what's the first 90 days, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we were only pulling about 1,000 in the first 90 days. So that's, what is it? The rate I've seen on average is about $18 to $20 for 1,000.
Yeah. Yeah. That's roughly correct.
And that doesn't really seem like it's worth going through the process of getting funding for, I don't know, like less than a quarter of what it would take per month in order to run things.
Right.
So I'm kind of on the fence. Like, I feel like I'd really want to start considering funding at about 5 to 10,000 hits in the first 30 months, 30 days.
Yeah, that's a good, definite good time. Anything over $3,000 and advertisers will start looking at you a lot more seriously.
When I started doing Geekcore Radio, I know that's more of a traditional podcast, or it's an interview style podcast. It's not an audio drama.
Right.
I built in at least two slots for ads, and I think I'm going to add a third for future episodes. And that's for the sole purpose of the idea that once it gets to that 3 to 5,000 hits in the first 90 days, I can actually replace them with legit ads as a way of funding.
Yeah.
And I'm actually thinking about doing that with my other projects as well, because I don't want, it's fun at first, but it'd be nice if, and it's also kind of an acknowledgement of, hey, there's going to be an ad here eventually. You better get used to it.
Right.
So I'm kind of feeling that out right now, as opposed to just talking about our Patreon.
Yeah, because one of the limitations you have with Patreon is the same you have with advertisers, is in order for Patreon to really work out for you, you have to have an audience. So
yeah. Yeah, Patreon is really hard to manage for that reason. It's not self-feeding.
No.
It's really just a way of capitalizing on popularity.
And an audience that you've already built, yeah.
Yep. So, I mean, you were on the talk for that, Austin, the one where we met with the Patreon community team.
Mm-hmm.
I've been slowly incorporating a lot of that stuff into our Patreon. Like, we recently got rid of the $1 level for the Legendsmith Productions Patreon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was one of the things they recommended, because at the $1 level, Patreon has to take something like 45 cents off of your...
Right, yeah.
The contribution. Mm-hmm. Because it's a 35 cent minimum, and then it's either... I think it's... So it's 40 cents. Because it's 35 cent minimum for the transaction, and then 5 cent for the Patreon cut.
Right.
5%. Yeah, you're losing 40% of your revenue if you're only getting $1... from that. So we got rid of the $1 level and we've just switched over to the $2 level.
That makes a lot of sense. We'll have to do that.
I think it's a good idea. And it's one of the things they actually encourage people to have the minimum be $5, but pretty much everybody on the call was like, I don't think our fans are going to be, I think we'd lose like half of our patrons if.
Right. Yeah.
If it started at $5.
Yeah. Even if you can get a buck or two here and there from a lot of people, that can add up. So.
Right.
I can see putting it at $2. You know.
So we increased it to $2. I'm letting the people that are at $1 right now stay at it, but I sent them a message saying, like, hey, here's the reason why we're getting rid of the $1 level. I'm not going to force you to get off of this, because money's money, and it's still helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But you're not helping as much as you think you might. Just to let you know.
So your 35 cents a month doesn't even buy me coffee.
It's like, if you're actually trying to contribute to what we're doing as a production, the $2 model is like, at least we'll get 80% of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's more what people I think are imagining is going to be a fee, but
right. Yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah. Then restructuring how our model of rewards goes, like, we had early releases be a lot higher tier, trying to bait people in.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really working. We were seeing like maybe one or two people signing on for early releases, and I'd rather have people just listening to it earlier. I mean, like, so we lowered that down to the $5 tier as opposed to like the $10 or $20
tier. Okay. Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff. And it seems like even over the last week, because I only implemented that, I think sometime last week, a couple of people have already upconverted based on that.
Nice.
So that's good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And so I guess I need to start spending more time on really doubling down on how to get more patrons and how to provide a service enough for people that want that, not just to contribute to making it so we can do the thing.
Right.
But actually want something in return, trying to figure out what they want without asking them, because most people are not going to tell you what they want in this
case.
Most
people don't even really know. They don't know until you show them something. And they're like, what can you do? I don't know. What?
Yeah. Did you ever hear the thing about, I think it's Henry Ford when he invented the Model T?
No. What thing?
So there's a famous quote from him saying, I don't ever ask my customers what they want because they usually don't know. If I had asked people what they wanted before automobiles were common, they would have told me a faster horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. Sometimes for certain things you can ask customers, but for certain things you have to kind of know better than they do. And that's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You've got to know it as a listener as well as a producer in order to kind of feel out, you know, what your audience wants to experience.
And that's hard for me in particular, because really, if I'm supporting a show, if it's like a YouTube channel or an audio drama or a webcomic or whatever, it's almost exclusively because I want that project to succeed.
Yeah, that's how it is for me too. Mm-hmm. I don't even want the extras. I want that project to keep making more episodes. So,
Right.
Do that.
So maybe I kind of wish I had a different, like, that somebody had made a patron kind of like samples of what different kinds of patrons are. Cause I feel like there are like stereotypical styles of patrons.
Yeah. There probably are like groupings. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I can only really think from the perspective of what I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I might be underserving these other types without realizing it. So yeah,
I had never really thought about it that way though. I mean, I mean, you're absolutely right. And it makes perfect sense. I just never thought about it in that aspect, I guess.
So yeah, that the talk that we did with Patreon helped a lot with leaning in that direction. So what we started offering is, hopefully we can bait people in with free merch as a one-time deal when you switch over to a certain tier. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking one of the things they talked about was you can give one-time offers to people of a lower tier, where they'll get like more merch, more of the reward than normal when they switch up to it. So like, let's say I have car magnets that we've printed out. I brought some of them up to the cookout we did last year or 2 years ago, whenever that was. Let's say that they normally get one car magnet when they switch up to the $10 level. But if I make a special where if you convert within the month of June, for example, then I'll send you 2 car magnets and 2 stickers as opposed to just the one.
Yeah. Nice.
And then the idea would be that they hopefully stay at the $10 tier because it's a one-time reward.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually need to go back and re-listen to that whole conversation.
It was a good conversation.
It was.
I think
that's available in the Audio Drama Hub group, isn't it?
No, it's on YouTube.
Oh, is it?
Yes. The hostess is the one who has it on her channel, or it might be on the
Fool and Scholar.
Fool and Scholar. I keep wanting to say Fool and Sword, but Fool and Scholar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It might be on there.
Caitlin and Travis.
Thank you. Caitlin and Travis. So it might be on their YouTube channel, but something similar.
Awesome.
Okay. I'll look it up. Well, I guess we probably should say at some point, since we haven't yet, the reason why we're having this three-way discussion is that I believe this is Scooter's last episode.
Man. As co-host.
That's correct. Yeah, I'm backing out of being a co-host. My life got too crazy with all these other productions. I need to focus up on my own stuff.
Yeah.
100% understand.
But, I mean, you still might hear me from time to time. I might do interviews if you need me to... If you want me to hop on and do something with you guys every so often.
Absolutely. I mean, we still got interviews with you. Yeah,
absolutely.
Actually, I got one thing for you. If you know, sure. I'm going to put you on the spot now. Do you know any vocal exercises?
Yes.
Okay. Can you run us through a vocal exercise that we can play for the, I'm starting to incorporate things like vocal exercises into the show. So.
Oh yeah. So let me pull up. If you give me a second.
Sure.
So we have,
certainly.
for Legendsmith Productions and all of our different shows, like Anansi Storytime, we do usually halfway between each season, and at the in between seasons, we run workshops for our actors. Okay. And so we've been slowly recording notes from those workshops.
Nice.
Let's see if I can pull up the document for that. Yeah, here we go. And so it's just based on other things we found online or things that our director or some of the actors have found. Where is the... All right, so one of my favorites is actually, it's a facial exercise, not necessarily a vocal exercise. It's called Mouse and Lion. For mouse, you make your mouth really tiny. Like really sour. You've eaten something super sour. And then lion, you make your mouth as big as possible. And you cycle back and forth between those combinations for about a second or two each, five times. And that stretches out your mouth and gets it used to the different major extreme positions that happen.
Nice.
And it actually forces you to think more about what your mouth is doing. That one's really fun. Man, we had a vocal exercise that I really liked because it was something silly. Here we go. We do a lot of tongue twisters. And my favorite one, I'd say, is freshly fried flying fish, freshly fried flesh. And you would just say that five times
freshly
fast.
Freshly fried flying fish. What's the second part?
Freshly fried flesh.
Freshly fried flying fish. Freshly fried flesh. Okay. Freshly fried flying fish. Fleshy. Yeah, that's a tough one. I'll have to work on that one.
It's a really good one because it gets... you pass the point of looking for specific patterns because your brain has a really hard time of, even if you're not looking at it, but it has such similar stuff. You have to really focus on it to get it right.
Nice. I like that one.
We've got why he's leaving. Thank you, Austin, for reminding us to actually say that.
Sure.
We're just going to roll into the episode with no explanation whatsoever.
Pretty much par for the course. I remember I've done a couple of interviews where I was like, oh yeah, what are we talking about again?
I forgot to introduce you.
I liked talking with you so much I forgot. Yeah. It's the worst.
It's when you do your posts, you like, oh, you do all your hellos after you've already signed off.
That's definitely a thing. So for Geekcore Radio, it's why I've been writing out scripts for myself. Even if I don't force myself to like 100% follow it, having a script means that I don't forget parts. Like I don't forget to introduce an artist.
Yeah, or
talk about some aspect of it. That's important.
Notepad just right there next to me whenever I'm in front of a microphone, just jotting down stuff. It does.
It really helps. I mean, I cannot discount the usage of being able to write down what you're doing so that you can reference it later. For notes or whatever.
And then 2 weeks later, I look at it and I have no idea what the hell this note is about. I have no idea what it's for. Because whatever I wrote was only momentary.
Oh, yeah. Now, so I keep a Google Doc that's just called names. And because it was originally when one of my friends said something ridiculous, I would write it down in case I wanted to use it for a project or something. And... it's slowly been transforming into the document that I used to come up with the fake commercials that I use for Geekcore Radio and the other projects. It is. And then, like, so I can just pull up my phone and write down really quickly, pull up the Google Doc and just add.
Yeah, some of the stuff doesn't make any sense at all. Like,
yeah, but it's a really weird journal. Like, one of them just says Rutabaga three times. I don't know. I'm sure there was a joke at the time, but like I don't get it. It's like some of the stuff is just really strange, and then other ones it's really easy. Like for episode 2 of Geekcore Radio, one of the comments that was in here was just a god-shaped hole, and so one of the fake commercials I made was for like a location in Wisconsin where there was just like a hole in the ground that looks like a god. You'll know. It's God-shaped.
I don't know. God-shaped hole. You'll know it when you see it. You know?
I think that's literally what I say. It's like, when you see it, you'll know. That's one God-shaped hole. That's but yeah, so like a lot of... so whenever anybody comes up with a fun idea and doesn't really care if I steal it, then I dump it in this, and then hopefully it'll inspire something later.
You should get a hold of Owen and doing all the fucking puppets, Ed.
Wait, what?
You absolutely should.
Oh, wait, was that from the cookouts?
That was from the cookouts, yeah. when you came up with all the fucking puppets for Owen's
characters. That's right. There. I would love that. That's, I wonder what Owen's up to. I haven't talked to Owen in a while.
He's around.
Yeah, he's always online.
So one of my favorite ones that I think this is going to come up in a future episode pretty soon was Shoes, America's Top Van Maker. I literally did a spit take when I thought of this because I was at like a restaurant. That's and my hilarious. Friends were talking about how much they love their vans, and it was just, I tickled myself. But yeah, like that kind of stuff. It's just, so yeah, if you all think of anything that's just utterly ridiculous and want to let me know what it is, I'll gladly add it to this document, and it might make it into a fake commercial at some point.
I think I have some scrap ads somewhere that I can throw your way, definitely.
Oh, I'd love that.
I'll see what I can find.
Oh man. Yeah, I cannot tell. And some of these things are never going to happen, probably, like The Walking Dad, which is just a bunch of zombies that instead of saying brains, say really bad jokes, dad jokes. But I don't know how you can make that into a commercial. Like, it's a fun concept, but I've yet to have the inspiration for how that's a commercial.
That's awesome.
Just a bunch of dads walking around going, get it? Get it?
Get it? Get it? it's I really like the concept, but I have no idea how to actually like make it into a functional commercial.
Yeah, sometimes the ideas are too abstract and like they're funny, but you just can't really take it beyond the description.
Oh, that's right. And America's Got Talons. That's it's the singing slash activity competition, but only between giant raptors.
Well, I'm the next America's Got Talents.
Exactly. Yes, exactly that.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so also one of the things that I'll do is I'll go to different communities every so often and be like, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm making fake commercials for something. If you come up with a really weird product, let me know, and we might include it in our show. And a lot of people have been really enjoyed just coming up with, I don't end up using most of them, but I'd say one out of every four is like truly hilarious.
Nice.
And worth using. Nice.
Yeah, and that gets your audience engaged. That's like huge on audience engagement, just having, you know, people having your audience and, you know, the actors throw stuff at you.
So that's one of the other things that we've been doing is that I've decided with the most recent episode, because I'm working on episode, I'm going to be probably recording episode 3 this week for Geek Core Radio. And then I'll be writing the script for 4, hopefully this week. But since I don't know what commercials are going to be in episode 4 yet, I thought I'd just go to our Patreon and say like, hey, here's the 6 ones that I think are the funniest. Choose 3 of them. And that's what we'll use. And then put it up as a poll.
Nice.
And then, you know.
What do you think the chances are that people will respond?
So far, almost no responses. I mean, I think one person has responded so far. Not very good. Honestly, because we've only got about, 14 people that are patrons to our show. And it's really hard to get responses from patrons.
It really is.
Yeah. A lot of them just seem to be pretty happy with knowing that they're helping out. As opposed to wanting to actually interact.
Right.
So that's also one of the things we've been playing around with is the idea of different patronage levels giving you different weight for your votes.
Oh, yeah.
Like once the poll's over, I'll open up the document and then the true number of votes for different things are depending on what level you are on the patronage.
Hmm.
So if you're like at the bottom level, the $2 level, you get one vote. If you're at the $5 level, technically your vote is worth 2 votes.
Nice.
So, I mean, we're trying that out to see if that works, if that's something people even care about. But clearly from people not really responding from polls, you know. I don't know if anybody really cares. That could be more fun if we had like a really large amount of patrons or something, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think right now your best focus is on growing your patronage.
Yeah, and actually,
let me ask you this. Did you post on social media that there was a poll on your Patreon page?
Well, since it's for patrons only, not really. Because I don't really know. It's weird with this whole paywall idea. I don't really know how to market it. Because if I talk about it to non-patrons, they're going to be like, jerk. Thanks.
Thanks for the info.
It's not like... because like if I say that we released an episode that's behind the paywall, that's one thing. Because that's... But if I'm just saying, hey, we're talking about... We have a poll. Like, nobody... That seems really like, I want you to join, I want you to patron our show so you can vote on commercials. I mean, like,
well, no, all I meant was that maybe that's that would be the only way your current patrons would see it.
Oh, actually, that's a good point. Yeah, I probably should.
Yeah, make fun of me now.
Yeah,
we would.
I mean, yeah, that's probably still gonna happen, but yeah, that's
you're right, but we're still gonna make fun of you.
Probably not.
That's fair.
I never thought about it from that particular angle. Yeah, because I know a lot of people turn off the notifications from their patronages. And I do too, because I support, I don't know, 8 shows. And I don't want to get emails for every time that any of them post anything. I would be doing nothing but reading emails from the shows that I sponsor.
Right. So yeah, maybe that's the only way your current patrons would see it. Maybe they don't even know that the poll's there.
That's fair. I never thought about that, actually. And that's another good way of letting people know that you have a patron.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because if your patronage does tend to turn off the notifications, how to communicate with your patrons? Yeah,
I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. I don't even really know the best way to get new patrons. That's why I've been focusing on building an audience. But even that's kind of hard sometimes.
A lot of that's just keep making stuff, keep making more, keep producing.
And then just kind of roll the dice and see how it works out
where you can along the way.
That's the model that I'm definitely thinking about, as far as like, that's one of the reasons that we keep just making shows, even if, because like Legend Smith is doing okay. I don't know, people, probably 200 or 300 people listen to every episode, which is not super great. But it's slowly growing over time. So that's the important part to me, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as you're growing.
Yeah.
And I came from... I came from theater, so 300 people is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah. That's true, but online...
Oh, I know that's nothing like... online, but just... in terms of comparative audiences, so, that's like, whoa! I've got a stadium here!
Right. So it's interesting, because I've had a producer page for a long time, like probably ever since I started working on Storytime, called Scooter's Web. And that's way more popular. Way like painful levels of like every post is seen by like 10,000 people.
Yeah, really?
Easily. But a lot of that's just because it's me reposting stuff that I find other places. So it's not like... It's like, oh, here's a funny thing I found on Tumblr, or a funny thing I found on Reddit. So it's not...
So it's different. Out of curiosity, it's not like, do you cross-post Anansi stories or anything else on there?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, because you can tell which ones there are, because those are the ones that only 400 people will go to. Or have seen. But I mean, at least, usually every time I do that, I'll get like between 2 and 5 click-throughs from it. But really it's more of just a community of, hey, I found this cool thing. Most of those people don't actually know any of the productions that I've worked on. I mean, like they're coming to it for like the weird stuff that I find, not the fact that I'm a producer or anything.
Well, Scooter, I'd just like to say it's been great co-hosting with you.
It's been great having you.
I do hope that you'll come back occasionally.
Yeah, just let me know. Yeah. As long as it's not like all the time, I think we're good.
And
sure, of course.
Just let me know if you need like an interview, or if you just want me to hop on to talk about something.
And if you're looking for post-production information at any time, just, you know, if you've got a question, if you need hints or anything like that, just ping me.
Yeah, I was actually following a lot of your stuff on YouTube about Reaper.
Yeah, I haven't actually done any videos on Reaper lately because I've been super busy.
Yeah, there's a couple of people that do. So cobbling the things together helps. The bigger problem is this is so, the post-production stuff to this level is so, because I've done cuts and I'm super familiar with the process for cuts. That's not even a thing.
Right.
The problem comes in for all these little, like making it sound smooth, making the transitions sound good, like the actual mastering stuff.
Sure. Okay.
Almost everything I find out about, I wouldn't have even known to begin to ask. So it's hard to find a video if I don't even know. That'd be like you saying, watching a video on Spanish and not knowing there's even words that you should be looking up specifically.
Sure. No, I understand. What I could do is like, I can, I'll just like find a time when you and I can sit down and I can take you through my post-production process.
So I love that.
Kind of see what I do in terms of layers and, you know, how I fade out things and fade in things in order to keep them sounding within the space and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's with Geekcore, it's a little bit easier because I'm not trying to simulate, I'm not trying to tell a story.
Actually, you're working with Reaper, right?
Yeah.
So if you have like a snippet of a scene or something that you can send me, I can kind of design around it and send it to you so you can kind of see my moves and stuff in Reaper.
Yeah, sure.
And I'll use all Reaper tools so you don't have to have like any of the special plugins or anything like that.
I mean, mostly it's relatively simple because it's not like, you know, it's not complicated.
No, it's not. Like,
the most complicated thing that I did not realize until 2 weeks ago, and I've been running up and down the streets like yelling how much I love this, is side channel compression.
Oh, I love side chain. Yes.
I had no idea. So like I was individually going into there and manipulating the waveform for the background music during the intro and the outro so that you could hear me speak.
Okay.
I was basically doing that process, but like manually.
Okay. Yeah. Side chain allows you to bump up the levels on that music. So they're right up there with the same levels. And it'll just duck under when somebody's speaking. So everything's like nice and loud.
I did not like that's, and that's like 10 seconds to set up versus the 40 minutes to do.
Yeah.
Manually.
Yeah. It's a quick bus and you're done. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so stuff like that where it's just like, because
I really wish I could have seen you running up and down the streets.
What I found out about it, because my audio engineer was like, yeah, why don't you just do this? That sounds easier. I literally like just started cursing for like 20 seconds. And then I literally ran up the stairs yelling how angry I was and how excited I was. And then I did a quick thing for it. And then I did it again. I was all...
Yeah. So, yeah. Just so you know, that doesn't go away over time. Like you'll end up like years and years and years down the road and you'll suddenly be working with another engineer and they just do something you haven't thought of and you're just like, I'm so stupid. I'm so no. I've been wasting all this time.
That's definitely happened a lot. Like, so actually, you know what? We'll continue this for a little bit. I know that you have to go.
Oh, sure.
One of the things we keep running into, not just on, so Geekcore is getting a little bit easier. Most of the problems I run into with Geekcore are performance problems that I'm trying to fix in post.
Okay. Yep.
So I've been setting aside time to practice like 3 or 4 times a week where I just dry read through scripts to get better at the pacing. Because one of the things that I tend to do, unless I'm super paying attention really closely, is when I talk about something, I kind of have the end of my sentence drop off like this.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so in post-production, I have to find like the last two words and then like bump them up to different levels.
Okay. Yep.
It's super annoying. So I'm trying to like, and it's actually worse when you're dealing with your own voice that you performed this and now you're doing the post-production. So I'm angry at myself.
Oh, yes. Oh, you get angry with your own performance so much. You just like sitting there going, it's like, really did I really lip smack there?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, I can hear my face turning away from the microphone there. What was I thinking?
Did I say, again? That's like the 14th.
Oh yeah. So that's, I'm getting better about that just because the first episode for Geekcore Radio, I had to record from scratch 4 different times because the post-production got so long for each of the first three versions that I basically said, screw it. Like, just did it from scratch again. But each time the performance was better and needed less post-work.
Yeah. You get practice. Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, I'm trying to get around a lot of that stuff from practice. And I feel like Geekcore Radio at least is getting a little more stable. What we run into with our audio drama stuff is when we do voice modulation, like trying to make somebody sound not human. Mm-hmm. Making it not sound like a robot. Mm-hmm. Like we recently tried to make somebody sound like ethereal, kind of. They were supposed to be, it's supposed to be somebody turning into a fae.
Okay.
Or a fairy. Like a dark fairy. So it needed to have like a layer of their normal voice with like a secondary voice that sounded kind of more sinister behind it. And we got pretty close, but I feel like that could have been a lot better. And then there's another one where there's supposed to be, there's a lot of times where we have God speaking and we want to have their voice sound more godlike without just...
Have you ever tried doubling the track and then taking the second track and pitch shifting it?
Reaper actually has an option for doing that as far as one of the FX goes. So you don't have to even double the track. It'll...
Yeah, you can do a write and repitch.
Harmonize it or whatever.
Yeah. Just write and repitch and it'll play the normal track and then the second track will play it pitch shifted.
Yeah. So that's basically what we did, but it kept doing things where it would make it sound occasionally like... If the voice actor didn't stay in the same tonal level at all times, it would get weird. And it would sound really
artificial.
So what
I typically do is, so with monsters and fairies and stuff like that, I use animal sounds and I vocode them. So vocoders, you may be familiar with music that had, like, where the synthesizers talked. A lot of disco music had, a lot of music from the 70s had and early 80s had vocoding in it. It's that same process. Basically, instead of mixing your voice with a synthesizer, you're mixing your voice with an animal sound. And Reaper has a vocoder built into it. It's called Revocode or something like that. Something easy like that, I'm sure. But basically what you do is you have your main voice sample and you mix it with another sample like a lion or a bear or five or six different things that like kind of get the sound that you want. And you kind of mix them together so that you have a little bit of the original signal. So you have the articulators and stuff like that. But then you've got like this monstrous sound, or you can use like different materials like wind chimes. You can mix the voices with wind chimes if you want to go with a more fairy sound. It won't sound like wind chimes. It'll sound like their voice kind of multiplied by wind chimes, as if the wind chimes were like a reverb or something like that to their voice. It's how a lot of creature effects are created for like Jurassic Park and stuff like that, is you've got like the synth in front of you and a guy in front of a microphone making the noises.
Cool.
I need to really look into that, because that's definitely one of the things we struggle on, is that we have a lot of stories that involve non-human entities, and wanting to make it, I want to pull out a lot of the actor's performance. Like, there's one we did for the bonus episode for season two, the weird commercial thing we did, where the voice is really funny, but I would have liked to have had more of the voice actor's original performance in it. Because we ended up modulating it or changing it enough that you can barely hear. Yeah,
there's a balance there. You have to get just enough of the original performance. And usually I have to add a little lift on the highs in the EQ, especially in the 2K range where their articulators are. So you get those T's and S's nice and clear through the monster voice. And then it's just really a balance of making sure that the voice is clear but still sounds monstrous.
Yeah, that's so I'm gonna have to play with that. If you know of any things for that, you know, maybe I can send you that more than anything else.
I think I did a render video on my monster creation, and it'll help you get the idea.
Yeah, send me a link to that.
I will.
In case you weren't aware, the Audio Drama Production Podcast has a Patreon page. If you'd like to contribute to the show, you can donate at patreon.com/ADPP.
Thank you for listening to the Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Special thanks to Tanya Milojevic and Scooter Mann.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.